Can you believe it? We are just 1 week away from the 2024 NFL Draft. I can't wait. Welcome into First Draft. Mel, how are you feeling 1 week out from the draft?
I tell you, I'm just trying to juggle a lot of things, Field, as you are. You know, you get to this time of year and you got 50 million things and responsibilities, and you try to not overlap them. So what I tend to do is I'll greet everything and I'll realize I got three things at 12:30. I had to move ESPN Radio to 1:30 today. So a lot of different things there. But this time next week, I'll be driving to Detroit. I'll be in transit to Detroit. You will probably be already there, right?
I'll be there early, yes. Yeah. I'll be boots on the ground on Tuesday, Mel.
Ooh, getting in there early. Good deal. And like I said, we're going to have a lot of fun today. We got a lot of guys that are a little off the radar that maybe haven't been talked about a lot, Field, that maybe had a great pro day or people are getting on because they're going back and looking at the film and they're saying this guy may be a little underrated. You tweak your board. I know your rankings, I believe, Field, are finished, right? Are they etched in stone? Are they in pen? Are they done?
Well, they're on the website now. My top 200 was released on ESPN.com today. I got to be honest with you. It is a scary thing to think that 7 days out, they can be etched in stone. My goal is to resist temptation and not change anything, Mel. But I don't think there's too much that could take place between now and next Thursday that could dramatically alter how I feel about a player. It might just be a minor tweak here or there. And my mentality, at least at this moment, is to not actually make those changes and just live with how you submitted it when it went live on ESPN.com.
I'll say this, Field. You always get that pressure coming from outside sources, right, to get your ratings to work in unison with the way the draft unfolds. And that's not what ratings are. Teams only need, and you've been there, Field, 120 players to get through seven rounds? Okay. Yep. You don't need to try to match your ratings with, and they always do this, top 100. Who had the most players right in the top 100? I don't want to have that. I want to have guys that I have at 80 to go 160. You know, or guys that might go 80 that I had at 160. So you want that. Guys that maybe are taking higher than you think, lower than you think. You're not trying to match. If you're trying to do that, then might as well not even scout players, right? So you have to always not let that affect your objectivity and your subjectivity, because you want to be able to also look at these players and say, hey, this is what I think. I don't care what anybody else thinks. I don't care what Kuiper's rankings are. I don't care what anybody else's rankings are. And I've told you that from the beginning. Don't worry about it. But don't let mock drafts say, oh, my gosh, that guy's mocked in the second round. I got a player 180. I can't have that. Who cares?
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, you got to be hold to your feelings and what you saw. That's the great thing. If we were all the same, nobody would care. You know, everybody's the same. It's like, okay, they all agree that the differences of opinion are real. They happen every day in those war rooms. You know that. They're battling it out. They're pounding that table. And that's why I don't look at your ratings. You don't look at my ratings. And sometimes we agree. Sometimes we disagree. But that's the interesting part of this whole process.
No two ways about it, Mel. So we are going to dive into value players, by the way. And I defined value maybe a little bit differently. I kind of went by sort of round one, a player that I think might go too low in round one, just because other positions are going to move this player down a little bit. I'll dive into that in just a little bit long, just a little bit from right now, plus kind of day two guys and then a bunch of day three guys, because obviously most of the value picks are on day three. But Mel, I don't know if you saw this yesterday. I'm sure you saw the news that Bill Belichick will be joining the Pat McAfee draft extravaganza next Thursday night, which is going to be incredible. And Bill was on Pat's show yesterday, talked about a ton of stuff. I mean, talk about a fountain of football knowledge. That man is football knowledge. I thought it was so revealing to hear him talk about, you know, the things that you and I were just sort of expounding on, right? Like, who cares what everybody is saying right now? They're hearing. He's like, generally speaking, no team is going to be forthright about what they're going to do in the draft right now. A lot of this is just misinformation. He's not too concerned about grades right after drafts or about how high or how low this player was on the consensus boards. Ultimately, you got to have a process in place. You got to follow that process, and that applies to us draft analysts as well. Just a couple of housekeeping notes quickly for those that are going to be in Detroit, whether you live in the area or whether you are visiting to be a part of the draft. If you want to come see part of the First Draft podcast, we're going to do a show on Wednesday. I will be there. I know Mel will be in transit, but Wednesday, April 24th, Hollywood Casino at Greektown. You can go buy tickets right now at firstdraftlive.com. That's firstdraftlive.com. The show is going to be in the private poker room. Seating will start at 7. The show is going to start at 7:30. Tickets are $40 each. They include free appetizers plus First Draft merch for everybody who goes. And act fast now, because the first 20 people who buy tickets get them for two for the price of one. So that's $40 for two people. Again, firstdraftlive.com. And then, Mel, a week from now, we'll be on the air, obviously, and you will be in the same home that you have been on for a long time. Who else will be on the ESPN broadcast with you 1 week from tonight?
Well, I'll be Greeny. Mike Greenberg will be anchoring, obviously, the first day, second day. And then, of course, I'll be there with Lewis Riddick, Lou, who I evaluated when he was a defensive back coming out of Pitt. And, of course, Booger, who I evaluated coming out of LSU. All the guys I had evaluations on are all the ESPN field. And certainly we're going to have Molly McGrath will be there as well with the players and getting reactions. And Brian Ryder rides the producer, doing a great job day one and two. And then Rob Adansky, day three, will be great. Rob does a phenomenal job. And then Reese Davis steps in. And then we get Field steps over day three with Matt Miller. So we're going to have a lot of fun on day three, but the first couple of days are important. You mentioned Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick and Nick Saban doing draft stuff at ESPN.
Are you kidding me?
Nick was the defensive coordinator for Bill Belichick back in the day, in Cleveland. Think about all the history there. Great, one of the greatest NFL coaches of all time, greatest college coach of all time, all together talking about the draft. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And as Bill said, he would worry about Field. He did look at mock drafts, because mock drafts from credible sources meant something to him, because he was trying to get an idea of what they're hearing, because he knows we talk to everybody, right? Sure. You talk to your friends in the league, right? So he knows that that's going to give him an idea if they're trying to trade up, trade down, what may be a consensus, build a consensus on some of these guys, and it may help them decide maybe what they want to do in terms of a trade up or a trade down.
Yeah, it'd be great fun to see Bill talking. You mentioned Nick Saban, part of the ABC broadcast, where I'll be hanging out there on Thursday and Friday, Mel, as well. So ABC for me, day one and two, and then day three, we're getting the band together. Can't wait for that. That is for the hardcore fans who love the value of the players that we're going to be discussing on today's show here, Mel. But I'll dive in here first with a value player. Again, this player I think mm-hmm. belongs in the first round. He just might go a little bit lower because you're going to have a big run of quarterbacks, obviously, at the top, maybe five or six in the first round. We know there are going to be at least three great receivers taken early. We could see as many as six or seven receivers, all these offensive tackles. This is a long-winded way of saying, Mel, the Darius Robinson is going to probably go lower than I believe he should go based off of the evaluation of the player, the defensive end from Missouri who transformed his body in his game, formerly a defensive tackle with the Tigers, spent his last year playing a lot on the edge, but also still has the positional versatility to be a five technique, a three technique. He can line up over the center and rush the passer as a nose tackle as well, Mel. The positional versatility is so good for Darius Robinson. And while the combine did not blow you away with the 4.96 40, who cares? That's not his game, right? If that's what you're expecting from Darius Robinson, you've evaluated the Ron Robinson. You've been watching Chop Robinson instead, who can absolutely fly.
Right.
But Darius Robinson, a powerful, instinctive, relentless pass rusher who, if he goes somewhere in the late 20s, Mel, to me, feels like one of the best values in all of round one.
Yeah, you mentioned the scheme versatility. I think three technique, you can move him around. He's got to figure out. He is kind of a tweener. You got to figure out where you're going to maximize that ability. And the Detroit Lions would like interior pressure. They want an outside pass rusher opposite Aiden Hutchins. It'll be interesting to see Arizona, Detroit, teams like that in the late first round. I'm with you. The pro day, he said, hey, I'm going to come back and do a lot better. Hey, look at the bench press numbers went skyrocketing. And he said it. And I like guys that say it and deliver. And Darius Robinson said it, and then he delivered. And he did have a productive season, and he does have the scheme versatility to be a late one. So I'm with you, Phil. I think he is going somewhere between, say, 26 and 32.
Okay, so let's go from day one to probably every other player that we mentioned, Mel, is going to be day two, day three, maybe even undrafted in the case of a couple of them. But I think all the guys we have on our list will be drafted. Let's go to a tight end, Mel. And you and I have talked about this tight end class endlessly. It's not great. It's Brock Bowers and then a lot of other players. But who is a player that you think deserves a bit more attention?
I cannot believe, and it's surprising. I always go through this process the last 3 months since the season. I haven't heard Cade Stover's name mentioned much. I mean, yeah. I just haven't heard it. He's been quiet in terms of the overall chatter, right, that we hear. And we're all talking different tight ends and whatever. Ben Sinnott seems to be red hot right now, right, as a second-round pick. Great, he's a heck of a player. But nobody's talking Cade. Cade was a linebacker, started a game, did a lot coming. He was a defensive guy with a defensive mentality. Moves to tight end, 77 catches, 10 touchdowns over the last couple of years. So he didn't have C.J. Stroud. He had Kyle McCord, who's now at Syracuse. And he ran 4.65 at 6'4", 247 pounds, almost 250. He's tough. He's intense. He caught the ball well. He battled after the catch, blocking. Cade Stover is just a good football player. And if I can get him... Phil, give me a round. Where would you guess right now Cade Stover goes?
I think he goes somewhere late third to late fourth. That's my guess. It's somewhere right, in so that 30.
If he gets into, if he's sitting there in day three and you're needing a guy for the fourth round who's going to come in and you know he's going to give you the attitude, the desire, the want to, and also produced. You talk about a guy averaged almost, what, 12, 5, 13 yards a catch with, like I say, didn't have C.J. Stroud, had Kyle McCord. To me, I think you know Cade Stover is at underpublicized tight end that's going to play a long time in the NFL.
There are a lot of those underpublicized tight ends. You know, I've talked about my guy Tanner McLaughlin a lot from Arizona. Yeah. Better athlete, inferior blocker to Cade Stover. I think he's a better athlete, at least. Has so much pass catching upside. Great story coming from what, Southern Utah to University of Arizona as a basically a preferred walk on Mel. He broke Gronk's records for most career catches by a tight end at Arizona. So that right there has my attention. But I think a lot of them could end up hearing their name called somewhere between picks 90 and like maybe 140 or so. Obviously, the rounds get a bit bigger as we get into round three and beyond with those compensatory picks. All right, so you went with one Ohio State player. I'll go with another one. Michael Hall Jr., defensive tackle from Ohio State. Again, this defensive tackle class is kind of a take your pick, right? Byron Murphy II, we think, is probably going to be the first one taken. And maybe by a decent amount of picks, right? He might be 10, 15, 20 picks higher than the next defensive tackle. Maybe that's Johnny Newton. Maybe it's Mason Smith. Maybe it's somebody else. But Michael Hall Jr. should not be overlooked, Mal. He had a sack and a half last year. All right, that number is not going to blow you away by any stretch. But with Michael Hall Jr. betting on a player whose disruption was consistent. Now, he's smaller. He's under 200. He's under 300 pounds, I should say. He's a guy that, you know, he's going to have his moments where offensive linemen get the best of him. But Michael Hall Jr., to me, one of my favorite interior disruptors. And we're seeing more and more teams these days, Mel, prioritize guys that live behind the line of scrimmage amongst defensive linemen. We don't have as many guys who are sitting there holding the point of attack. I was talking about how, you know, 15 years ago, Casey Hampton, a nose tackle, drafted out of what? University of Texas, right, Mel? Like that role, that play, he was an awesome player, by the way. But the number of teams that are saying, we're just looking for a guy that can basically take up space for our linebackers and other defensive linemen to do work, that role has been diminished in the NFL. So guys like Michael Hall Jr. that can live behind the line of scrimmage, I think are way more valuable.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza, better because it has to be.
Adapt or die, right? That's what they said on Moneyball. Billy Beane, I think, said on Moneyball with Brad Pitt, right? Adapt or die. Yeah. Bottom line is, Field. You know, you think about Gilbert Brown. You mentioned Casey Hampton. I go to right now, Tavondre Sweat. My guy, I like Tavondre. Right? Tavondre was a player tech. I think he penetration because he's not Paul. Pushed around against the run, he's going to be a problem. I have an issue with that. level, but he's going to be in the backfield. He's going to be a guy with the pass happy ways of the NFL at times. He's a guy closing out the first half, right? Well, you got to close it out second half, and you got to be able to get after the quarterback. Those are the guys that attract attention in the second round, right? With Hall, latest third, or a guy like Tavondre Sweat who drops into the late day two, early day three. So it's going to be interesting to see where those guys come off the board who are, I think, suited for the way the game's played today.
All right, let's keep moving here, Mel, and a player that I don't know how much we've talked about him. I know our guy Matt Miller does love him. I think he had him mocked in the second round during one of his mock drafts. That's Mason McCormick from South Dakota State. What do you like about his game?
What do offensive line coaches tell you they have to have in a player, right? You got to be smart and you got to be tough. And you got to be able to be prevent some versatility, present that to an offensive line coach coming out of South Dakota State, where you were 4-year starter, you played forever, and you're mean, you got nasty, you could be center, but he was a left guard his whole career. Mason McCormick, I think he gets to that second level, he can pull. I tell you that he has the qualifications, he has the attitude, the approach that offensive line coach will say, give me that guy. I can do something with him. Mason McCormick, and I like these South Dakota State players. That's a team that won a lot of games because they had some talent. Okay, they got some interesting guys. They're ballers. And these guys stayed field. They didn't go. They didn't leave South Dakota State. The loyalty to that program is phenomenal. I mean, so I'm going to go to Isaiah. Yeah, you love Isaiah Adams so much, you can't get him out of your mind.
I know. I do love Isaiah Adams. Watch him go higher than you realize, though. Watch him go.
You're the guy, Isaiah Adams, ill in the way offensive line. Hey, but this kid, Mason McCormick, if you can get him in the third round, fourth round area, something higher, bottom line is you're getting a plug and play guy who's going to give you the desire, the competitiveness, the play a long time. So I'm a big Mason McCormick fan. Have been. We highlighted him, I think, back when we did our podcast, whenever, and I don't remember, early January, mid-January. I don't even remember. But I'm going to go back to Mason McCormick so we don't forget about just how good he will be in the NFL.
Had a great combine as well. I know that people say, what does it matter how high an offensive lineman jumps, how far he jumps in the broad jump? But, Mel, it does underscore explosion, right? It shows that that guy has the ability to convert some of that explosive torque and power through his core into blocks. I had him a little lower on the big board. I think I could see him maybe landing late 4, early 5 in terms of rounds for Mason McCormick. Okay. But we'll say, I plenty of experience. A 6-year player, 4-year starter at South Dakota State, back-to-back national champion. They haven't lost a game. I think they had 29 straight wins for South Dakota State. If memory serves, the last time they lost a game was to Iowa. It was like a 7-3 game at the beginning of the 2022 season. So a lot of winning in that South Dakota State program. Tucker Kraft obviously made a strong mark in his rookie season last year coming out of South Dakota State. I know we've talked about this player, Mel, but I can't quit him, so I'm going to keep talking about him. Dewayne Carter, so a second defensive tackle on my value list here, Mel. Out of Duke, 3-year team captain, only time that's ever happened in the history of the Duke Blue Devils program. A guy who basically from day one was a contributor for the Blue Devils. And what I like about Dewayne Carter more than anything else, Mel, is the disruption and the versatility. Yes, he's a defensive tackle in terms of listed position on the team roster, but he'll play some edge for you. He'll play 5 technique. He'll line up over the center. There's just so many different ways that you can deploy Dewayne Carter. And again, sacks are very sexy and they get you into the Pro Bowl and they certainly do matter. I'm not dismissing the value of sacks, but there are ways to register disruption that go way beyond sacks, Mel. And I think that Dewayne Carter, even if the production in that category was not that great this past year, I saw a very disruptive player. That Notre Dame game is the one that I always think about for him. Great Notre Dame offensive line that's going to have, you know, 2 offensive tackles drafted. One in Joe Alt might be a top 10 pick. And then Blake Fisher might be a top 115 or 120 player also going to get drafted. And Dewayne Carter consistently made life difficult for that Notre Dame team. That alone, that disruption that he can bring as a pass rusher alone makes me think he could be a very, very solid round 3 pick.
Yeah, it was interesting. We had the 10 defensive tackles to start the year, and out of that 10, guys moved in like Carter. Some moved outfield. So defensive tackle didn't work the way we thought it would this year. Pretty interesting how it all shakedown at the end with Dewayne Carter having a chance maybe to be a late day 2 pick.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised by it. You mentioned some of those defensive tackles moving down. Guys like Leonard Taylor II, Mel, like that's an example of a guy who I might have thought could go, you know, the first 45 picks at the beginning of the season. Now I have a much less better gauge of where exactly he'll fall into the draft. All right, so we are talking value picks, Mel. We're also talking about schools that some people listening right now or watching right now may not have previously heard of. Give us a small school player from the state of Texas.
Buzz. What do you hear about Buzz this time of year, right? Who's the kind of the talk of the town? Whose name comes up every time you have a conversation? It'll be Jalix Hunt. Yeah. And I look at this kid. The story is amazing. The journey. We also have the journey the kids have through high school. When did they start playing football? What did they do in high school? That's what I used to do in the Blue Book, the draft board back in the day. I want to give them a kind of a snapshot of how that player got to this point. And then you figure out based on the report and the scouting evaluation, do you like him or don't you like him, right? You don't even have to see the player. You can read that. And that's what we try to do with what we do, Field. Bring to light these players. And Jalix Hunt, you think about Cornell. You know, he was the growth spurts. The player
started,
He's a safety. At one point in time, he didn't know what he was probably going to play in terms of position. He's a safety. He's 190, 195 pounds, right? He doesn't do a lot. And, he goes into the portal and nobody's really interested for obvious reasons. The production wasn't there, the lower level competition. It was a Houston Christian because he can play. And he lit it up. And you think about the Huskies and the pass rush and the sacks and the forced fumbles. He did it all, tested really well. So Jalix Hunt, Field, and I'm going to say this right now. I think he could be a late second, early third round pick. That's my opinion. That's what I think, because the pass rush, if you really think about it right now, Chris Braswell, Alabama, Mo Kamara, I like coming out of Colorado State, I like Brennan Jackson coming out of Washington State. Does Jalix Hunt fit in with those guys? Do you move him a little ahead, a little behind?
I've got him below both of those guys.
Ahead.
Yeah.
What's that? Yep.
I have him behind both of those guys personally. That's my feeling though. But we're talking about the divisiveness. Like it's good to have differing opinions here. All right. So on there's such a fascinating idea about how high he can go, Mel, because I think the questions that I have with Jalix Hunt, and it's hard because when you're trying to measure how a guy will fare against top competition, and he has these past couple of seasons at Houston Christian, where obviously the competition was not great. And it's his first couple of years even playing this position. You mentioned he was a safety at Cornell, which is crazy to think that he could be a safety at an Ivy League school and then convert to a pass rusher and then eventually make it to the Senior Bowl. But he did show well enough down in Mobile, Mel, to make it feel like he does belong. I thought more day three for Jalix Hunt, but that's fascinating. The athleticism is so, so good. I just don't know if it's refined enough yet that I would feel comfortable taking him that high.
Well, that's the thing, Phil. We talk about what you're going to be when you're coached up in the National Football League, right? And you now have for 2 years a defined, but you only have one start at Cornell. So when you come to Houston Christian and you're raw and you know from a training standpoint, just from weight training, from strength training, conditioning and technique and learning how to maximize all that talent, do you have the attitude? Do you have the approach? The length. He's got that great length as well as the closing speed, the athleticism and the production at that level. To me, if you say third round, and I think third round's realistic, Field. I really do. I think third round, at least probably not as realistic, could have. I think third round is legitimately realistic for Jalix Hunt.
Mel, anything could happen. Anything could happen, right? So you say third round, I say day three. One of us will probably end up being right one way or the other, Mel. And that's the beauty of the NFL draft. After about, I don't know, four picks this year, I don't feel real confident in a whole lot of things that I know are going to happen. All right, I'll move a little bit further down the board for me from where I was at Dewayne Carter. Again, a guy who I think could go on day two is Cedric Gray, a linebacker from North Carolina. Yeah. We've talked about how this linebacker class is not great, right? We don't have this guy who is a guaranteed first-round pick. Obviously, Edrian Cooper is probably the best bet to go in the first round from Texas A&M. Just when you've combined height, weight, speed, plus the production this past year, up to 8 sacks after just a half a sack the year before. Maybe he gives you some pass rush juice if a team wants to use him in a bunch of different ways. But the bottom line, this is not a class that features this, no doubt about it, top 15, no Roquan Smith in this year's class, right? But I do think Cedric Gray is sometimes just overlooked, Mel. I was thinking about it from this regard, is that what does Cedric Gray not do pretty well? I mean, obviously you're looking for a guy to go in the top 15, does a lot of things at an elite level, but Cedric Gray, a lot of tackle production, a lot of on-ball production, both in terms of sacks, interceptions, pass breakups, a lot of coverage reps, very good athlete, 3-year player at North Carolina. To me, he checks a lot of the boxes, and I think he's going to end up being a solid third-round pick.
Yeah, when I was doing the rankings, I didn't want to have him too far ahead of a player from the ACC, Jeremiah Trotter Jr. So I tried that. At one point, I had a gap there because I was a Trotter guy. And I said, well, Cedric Gray's impressive. And he's doing, like you said, doing everything right. but then I had too much of a gap. So when you look at those rankings, Field, you got to say, I don't like having this player here and that player there. So I kind of closed that gap between Jeremiah Trotter Jr., who I scouted his dad coming out of Stephen F. Austin, a whale of a player, right? So you try to close that gap. And actually on the rankings, what I have Cedric Gray and Jeremiah Trotter, boom, boom. They're right there. And I think for off ball, there's three positions, Field, and everybody listening, three positions. I got one of them phased out, and I'll take credit for that. That's running back, right? Yeah. We devalued running backs. I started that 25 years ago, and people jumped on it. So I was crazy. Now they're not saying I'm crazy. Now they're all on the bandwagon, right? Bandwagon's full. Nobody else allowed into the bandwagon, okay? Yep. No more tickets allowed. We're full. We're at capacity, right?
All right.
Full capacity on that running back bandwagon being devalued. I love them in the third round. Love them in the third, fourth round this year. Maybe some in the fifth. I think some of these running backs can get in the fifth. My guy Jalen Wright, where's he going to go? He played at Tennessee because, they had the Josh Heupel offense. You can only play in the offense you're in. Yeah, he has some gaping holes, but he's a heck of a football player. Bottom line is running back, off-ball linebacker, safety. Three positions, Field, that have been devalued in the NFL.
And all because of Mel Kiper Jr. Is that what you're telling me?
Just running back is all I'll take credit for.
Just running. Okay. So just for now, only running back credit.
That's it.
Sorry, I'm catching you as you need to look a little here. Catch your breath. Get a little drink of water here. I'll move into my next player here, Mel. But
I'll give you 5 minutes on this guy.
Yeah, there we go. I love Cedric Gray, though. You know, and you mentioned he and Jeremiah Trotter Jr., who I think highly of a player as well. Like from a pure linebacking standpoint, he plays the game so cerebral, right? He knows what he's doing, just like he's a thinking man's linebacker.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's got a good athleticism, but not great. And he's 6 feet and 228 pounds, right? So that's going to be something that some teams are going to say, we want 235, 245-pound linebackers. Maybe a team like Buffalo, who's had great success with some smaller, faster linebackers, mm-hmm. would say a guy like Jeremiah Trotter Jr. is worthy of being a starting player on our team.
Yep.
Others might say, hey, we like those bulkier, more physical guys, and they would be less inclined to take a Jeremiah Trotter Jr. All right, next up here, Mel, is a player. Back to you. The second time, two mentions of South Dakota State. You love to see it.
Jackrabbits. I love them. Yeah, you got to love these Jackrabbits. Yeah. I mean, they are just good. Isaiah Davis, 6'1¼", 218 pounds, okay? Big hands, ran 4.57, strong kid. But the production over a two-year period, I mean, a Wildcat. Remember, Pierre Strong, I believe in 2022, was what, a fourth, fifth-round pick? I'm going to say fourth round, maybe. I think he's a little bit better.
Yep. Yep.
Fourth round. I think he's a little bit better. It probably goes in that same general area, Field. Like Isaiah Davis, like this running style, team MVP, caught the ball out of the backfield very effectively. Like the way he plays the game.
Okay. Yeah. I just love the patience here, Mel, from Isaiah Davis. Such a smart, crafty runner. He knows exactly when to just sort of put that foot in the ground and accelerate. Good in the passing game, as you mentioned. Good finisher, too. Scored a ton of touchdowns for that South Dakota State offense. And I get it. They've got a good offensive line. They've got a dominant team in general. But when they needed him in big moments to finish off drives, and they obviously played the best of the best at the FBS level, given the fact that they have won back-to-back national championships, FCS. I was impressed by Isaiah Davis. Like, when they needed him late in games, he seemed to bring the very best. Awesome kid, too, Mel, right? I mean, this kid's got some off-the-charts football character.
Great kid. And the thing I was trying to debate for you is, what do I do with Braylon Allen, right? What do I do with Blake Corum? How do you factor Isaiah Davis? And I think Braylon Allen's one of the toughest players to evaluate in this draft with J.J. McCarthy. Liked him, didn't love him, but then I started watching him again. You know, we think about Wisconsin, and that's what they are. And then he got away from that a little this year. So I think Braylon Allen, Isaiah Davis, Blake Corum, Jalen Wright, trying to figure out how to finalize rankings on those running backs this year for me was very difficult.
I'd say this too, Mel. On day three, what I've realized as it pertains to running backs is so much of how teams stack them is going to be just what they're looking for, right? I mean, obviously, if you're looking for a guy to handle 20 carries, Braylon Allen's a much better bet than Bucky Irving or Dylan Lauby, right? But if you're a team that's already got that workhorse, but you're looking for a change of pace, a guy that can do some damage, you know, on screens or on perimeter runs, then you might say, hey, Bucky Irving is the guy for us, or me.
Yeah.
Dylan Lauby is the guy for us. I mean, the guy had 12 catches for 295 yards and two touchdowns against Central Michigan last year in one game. I mean, that's ridiculous production for a wide receiver, much less a running back in his biggest game of the season. So I'll keep the running back theme going now.
Okay.
Tyrone Tracy Jr., 6-year player in college. He finished up his last two seasons at Purdue, was sort of split duties in the backfield this past season as a runner, was a much more productive receiver at Iowa because He was a wide receiver. He was a wide receiver. He was a great player in the Indianapolis area, was the Gatorade Player of the Year in Indiana during his final high school season, Mel. Ran well at the combine, 4.46 for Tyrone Tracy Jr., good overall athletic profile as well. And that versatility is not to be ignored. I mean, I don't know exactly what his future looks like in the NFL, whether a team is going to say, based off the last 2 years, he must be a running back, or if a team is going to say, hold on, there's way more value for a guy that can be, you know, a slot receiver as opposed to a running back. Or maybe there's a team that just says he's an offensive weapon for us. But I love the player, love the versatility, love the ability to catch passes out of the backfield. Maybe there's some special teams value as well there, Mel. I'm in on Tyrone Tracy Jr.
What's it with the Iowa-Purdue deal? Charlie Jones did the same thing. Remember, Iowa to Purdue, Tyrone Tracy. You think about all these different things going on there. But the versatility, when you get into day three and you get a guy who can do what he can do, and running back, you get into Jaden Sheridan from Monmouth, who I like. I know there's a running back that I talked about earlier. I know you like coming out of a program that produces running backs galore, right? And he just had a phenomenal pro day, wasn't invited to the combine. I think you'll get to him today. If not, the Watson kid at Memphis, Blake Watson, heck of a football player. I think he's going to be a day three pick. Somebody really finds a guy that's going to contribute. Kenny Gainwell came out of Memphis as a fifth round pick. Look what he's doing with the Eagles. Blake Watson ran 4.3 field. Okay. Think about this. This is a wide receiver who was a wide receiver early on, Old Dominion kick returner. This kid can play. And think about Memphis and their history now. They're becoming running back with that. So I think when you look at running backs on day three, we're going to see some. When we're just sitting in Detroit in the afternoon on day three, we're going to see some good running backs come off the board.
Yeah. Blake Watson's a heck of a player as well. The Old Dominion star turned Memphis star. You're right. He's got some serious juice, Mel. That's what I'm looking for, by the way, in a day three running back. Because I want a guy that's got some juice. Because you do not expect a day three running back to be your day one starter. You expect him to be kind of the counterpunch, or you expect him to be the change of pace in your backfield. And I want a guy who's coming in with fresh legs and for the opportunity to potentially break a big one in a hurry. All right, Mel, as we know, the transfer portal has made college football an interesting game in the sense that guys might spend 3-4 years at one school like Tyrone Tracy Jr. did, and then get two more at a separate school. And we have our latest Ohio State to Notre Dame pipeline visitor, that being Javonte Jean-Baptiste. You like him?
I saw some things this year I liked. When you think about Ohio State, what kind of production? Let's think about this field. I wrote this down this morning. 4 years at Ohio State, right? 2019 through 2022, 10 sacks total, 10 tackles for loss. At Notre Dame just this year, 49 tackles. That was basically what he had those years. 10.5 tackles for loss, 5 sacks. He had 38 tackles in the last 3 years at Ohio State. He had 49 this year. 6'4.5, 248. He's got length. Love the length of Jean-Baptiste. 4.66, 34.5 vertical. And I saw some explosion. I saw some natural pass rush ability, the ability to locate the ball against the run. This is a kid, you think, day three, right? Day three pass rusher with length, who kind of put it all together, leaving Ohio State, coming to South Bend, coming to Notre Dame. I'm looking for those kind of guys. And I got to have on day three, I got to have potential. I got to have a guy that hasn't yet gotten to where he can be. He's got confidence now. He showed everybody he could do it, showed himself he could do it. And now all of a sudden you got length, and I got to have that day three. I don't want the short arm pass rushers on day three. I don't really want them early on. We'll see some of these guys where they come off the board. I like length, and I like the ability to get after the quarterback, that natural ability you can coach up, and you can keep improving on what we saw this year from Javonte Jean-Baptiste. So I think there's a kid day three. I'll take him.
All right, let me make sure that I do that correctly. Javonte Jean-Baptiste. That's the very French
pronunciation. Javonte Jean-Baptiste, yep.
There we go. I know you're the Notre Dame guy, so I defer to you on all Notre Dame pronunciations.
Hey, Malik Washington. Pronunciations we find, Field, they will change month to month, year to year.
They really do.
So keeping up on pronunciations is not easy. Okay, we try to get it right, but we're always going to think back to what it was last. So I try my best, but I know somebody's going to say, "He got it wrong." That's fine. We're looking at numbers. What do we do with scouts, Phil? We look at numbers, right? That's all we worry about.
Hey, Devon Achane to Achane. I mean, it's a whole thing, you know, Achane to Achanmel. It's hard to keep up with some of these names, but we want to do our best to get it right out of respect for the kids. So we will do our best to do exactly that next week, Thursday through Saturday. All right, Malik Washington made himself some serious money this past year, Mel. He transfers after 4 years at Northwestern to Virginia. He is a pint-sized dynamo, but how about this? He led the FBS in catches last year at 110. one of the best receiving seasons in terms of volume in the history of ACC. Broke all kinds of University of Virginia records, Mel. And part of what impressed me about Malik Washington this past year is that Virginia wasn't good, and nobody had any answer to slow him down. Now he's pint-sized, right? Under 5'9", probably under 200 pounds. But the shiftiness, the run-after catch ability, the toughness, the stuff he did in the red zone was good this past year, Mel. You don't expect too many 5'9 slot receivers to find the end zone more than 10 times, but Malik Washington did exactly that, has had a good pre-draft process as well, was down at the Shrine Bowl and really stood out there. He shined at the Shrine, as we like to say, Mel. There's a lot of depth in this class. I think he winds up being a day three pick personally. Could be late round four, could be sometime in round five. I don't think he's got as much juice as like a year ago, Pop Douglas, who ended up going in round six, not quite as shifty or as explosive as Pop, but might be one of those guys who his size pushes him down the board, but he ends up making an immediate impact.
Yeah, we always have to define the outside slot, all those different things you can get from Malik. But when you do it at two schools, now was most productive this year. It was interesting you said Virginia, just not a good team. Drake May struggled against Virginia. And we're talking about Drake May going, in the top part of the draft. That was one of those games about Drake and Virginia not being a great team. But bottom line is this kid, I think you're right. Day three of the draft is when he comes off the board. Field, I tell you, I don't know, who's your next guy? You got one more left?
I got one more corner from South Carolina. What do you got now?
All right, I got a corner. I mentioned him a couple months ago. And I said, boy, he's from the CFL with the Toronto Argonauts, and he's intercepting passes. And who is this kid? We got into Lane College. Then you talked about the league. You know the league he played in, Field.
Fan-controlled
indoor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So then he goes to East-West Shrine practices, does well there. Pro day solid. Had five interceptions for the year. MVP, about a rookie of the year, doing all these different things. Quantez Stiggers has made field. How many visits has he made to NFL teams in the pre-draft process?
I think Shefty said somewhere like 12 or 13. He had him on his podcast recently as well, by the way.
He was here in Baltimore with the Ravens. In Baltimore. So, Quantez Stiggers, when you look at we go tiers, and you're talking about a day three. I think when we start day three, round four is not out of the question, Field. And that's my intel. Round four is not out of the question. Round five, probably the lowest he goes, which is really impressive. And I'm so happy for this young man to go from he battled adversity. He never gave up. He is a testament to that. And then to play the way he did at the CFL level, East-West Shrine, Pro Day, he's done it all since then. He gets attention early, I'd say at the worst, mid-day three.
What a great story, Mel. Overcoming adversity and becoming a heck of a football player in the fan-controlled football league, and then also the CFL, Mel. Ball skills, right? That, to me, seems to be one of the defining traits here for Quantez Stiggers, is the ball skills are just ridiculous. They are very, very good. If you can find the football, you can turn it over. You've got a chance to compete at the NFL level with the kind of athletic ability that he has. All right. So last one, for me at least, Mel. And I don't think we talked about this player at all. And I get it, the production isn't wow, but this is a day three value pick, right?
Yep.
Marcellus Dial from South Carolina, who I like a little bit as a day three corner, Mel. He began his college football career at the Georgia Military Academy. I was there for two seasons and then winds up at South Carolina and becomes a pretty prominent player for the Gamecocks over the past 2 years. In 2022, Mel, he had three interceptions. He had 20 pass breakups over the past couple of years. And the traits that I see when I watch Marcellus Dial is he's a confident man-to-man coverage player. Very good at the catch point. Length. He's got the length as well. Ran well in the 4.4s at the combine as well. Has that good length. The production this past year, zero interceptions. I think, and I hope that there are people that are in the league listening to this podcast that are nodding when we say this, Mel. And I don't want to sound like fans have great insights, and I love the passion of fans during the draft. But one stat that needs to be not ignored, but deprioritized for cornerbacks is interceptions. I mean, teams aren't throwing them that way, right? It's great when Terron Arnold has five this past year, when Elijah Jones has five or six this past year for BC. Those guys got great ball skills, right? But I mean, teams just didn't bother throwing the way of Aquinyon Mitchell nearly as much this year. A guy like Marcellus Dial, zero interceptions this year was not a red flag for me. Ennis Rakestraw had one in his entire career, Mel. Andrew
Phillips didn't have any. Drew Phillips didn't have any at Kentucky. Yeah.
So I understand that a team may say or a fan may say, you want to take a guy who you're touting who had zero picks last year? How much of a factor was he really? But Marcellus Dial, I thought when teams did throw his way, good at the catch point, played through the football, forced more incompletions than the average cornerback would have.
Yeah, I think the bad hands, that's what you have to worry about. You want to have what frustrates me, Phil, is when an interception's there and you drop the ball on second down and a third down completion and the drive stays alive. The defensive backs, you got to be able to come away with the pick when it presents itself. And you got a lot of opportunities in the NFL. This is 1985, but I think you're totally right. Sometimes when you are avoided and a lot of these guys were former wide receivers and became corners because they don't have great hands. That's why they're playing cornerback. We got to always get that. But I love a corner who does have great hands. We'll be talking through the draft, when every time a guy's picked, that's one thing I'm going to try to highlight in my evaluation when these cornerbacks come off the board in Detroit next week.
Yeah, Mel, it's such a interesting position this year. There is some depth in this class. There may not be a Devin Witherspoon or a Christian Gonzalez, Mel, but I can't wait to see how these players shake out at that cornerback position. All right, so my question to you, Mel, is anything else you want to get off your chest here before we say goodbye for first draft, before Monday's last show, at least in our traditional format, prior to the draft?
I can't wait because I think, and I said this, and I always say, I'm not trying to overstate this field. And I think it's really come full circle. And I think everybody's kind of believing this is the most interesting draft we've had in a lot for me. And I always say, I don't remember any of this interesting. I was around in 83 when we had six quarterbacks in the first round. Three are Hall of Famers. Okay. John Elway, Jim Kelly, Dan Marino. Then we had a bust. We had a top 10 bust in Todd Blackledge. We had a couple just were so-so in Tony Eason and Ken O'Brien, right? So we had we had three Hall of Famers. What's going to happen this year? Are we going to have six in the first round? What's going to happen in terms of trades? I think it's really fascinating when a team needs a quarterback and somebody else does, and they're going to trade in, try to get the quarterback. They're going to trade out. Are they going to trade back and then back up? I think this draft, what do you think? 21 offensive players maybe in the first round? Is that going to be a record? 19's the record? We're going to get to 2021, field?
I think so, Mel. I'd be surprised if we don't, right? You can just count without thinking at all, Mel. Eight, right? Four quarterbacks, three receivers, Brock Bowers, without thinking. Right. That's just totally off the top of my head. You got to figure at least a half a dozen tackles. And that might be conservative, of course. Could be three more wide receivers. So you add 9 to 8, that's 17. You throw a couple of curveballs in there as well, Mel. Wouldn't surprise me at all if we get 20, 21, 22. It's such an offensive heavy draft.
And to go to the point of the most interesting draft field, the interesting players. And I think there's one guy's name comes up. I think we're trying to draft football players, right? That's what we're trying to draft, is really good football players. And you get into these numbers, and we say speed. And I was told if this player ran 4.55, 4.53, he was a first-round pick. If he ran 4.6, he was a second. That was Keon Coleman. Where does is Keon Coleman really going to get into the second round? And we're talking about day two, the Friday night. Is he going to get the Friday night? So is he going to be one of those 7, 8, 9 wide receivers that go in the first round? When ability, he looked like he would be. On speed, 4.6, 4.61, whatever it was, bottom line is that's the number they said second round. We'll see if it holds that way next week.
I can't wait to see it. He's a great football player, Mal. He's a great kid as well. We can't make the comparison that every wide receiver that runs a little bit slow could become the next Puka Nacua, but it's at least a little bit of inspiration that if you go to the right system and you're utilized the right way, you don't have to run a 4.35 or a 4.440 at wide receiver to be a dominant player from the minute your NFL career begins. All right, Mel, that was a lot of fun. Always good to highlight some of the value players. We are going to address burning questions on Monday's draft. We cannot wait for that. And in the meantime, go check out all of the new content on ESPN+. You and I are heading over right after we finish this show to go talk about wide receivers. That entire show, plus a lot of others, will be on ESPN Plus right away. Mel, we'll talk to you Monday. Enjoy the final weekend before the draft
begins. I got one last thing to say. This was a one bottle water podcast. One full bottle water down. The throat's hanging in barely. I hope you are hanging in, Phil, because we're talking all day, every day. So I got the first podcast. Gotcha. I didn't have any today.
Not an ad. Not an ad, but Halls, we love you. Thank you, Halls.
Oh, you're right. I always have them here. Didn't have them today, but the first podcast we've done together where I got through one full bottle of water. So that tells you the draft is coming up soon, pal.
I know. I'm starting to feel a little bit in the sore throat, Mel, but I got a lot of tea, a lot of throat lozenges, and
a lot of honey.
Any other tips are always appreciated. Honey, that's right.
Mel? We got a lot of everything. We need help. This time of year, we all need a little help. Yeah.
Yeah, and some sleep would probably be good, although recent nights suggest that sleep is not going to be very frequent.
It's called adrenaline. You get final adrenaline. You know when you crash the week after the draft? The week
after May the draft, 3rd. I can't wait for you. Yeah,
getting through that draft grade show is a challenge, believe me.
We're going to find our way to power through it. But in the meantime, we will talk to you all on Monday for the Great Mel Kiper Jr. I'm Field. We'll talk to you guys then.